Former Best Action Jack, something else. Dave Scatina finally got around that tanker. Did you say hello to the guy when you went by?
Yeah, the poor guy in the car didn't make it past that tanker.
Really, he was a bit. He was bit.
Yeah, that car was turned around completely. They had both lanes blocked. So,
yeah.
Apologize to the listeners for starting late.
Well, yeah, I was by there last night and flew by there. But all it takes is a tanker and a car in the same spot.
Right.
SP Feeder's up 12. Nancy Feeder's up 87. We'll just have to get as much knowledge out of Lou in 20 minutes as we normally do out of an hour. How are we going to do that?
I'll talk fast.
Oh, God.
Real fast.
How are you, bud?
It'll be like the old Federal Express commercials, which are still some of my favorites.
Oh, God. Well, the just a quick news from around the store here is we've got Evergrande. Evidently, has been able to make their payments by selling off pieces of their company. But people still thinking they're going to go under probably in next April, and they have a $3.5 billion bid. Plus, the place across the street here, Lua 175 West Jackson, came out last night. They're entering foreclosure today. Wow, that's, what is it, the third or fourth biggest building in the city? It's a whole square block? So I'm not,
ouch.
How much of that do you think is going to happen?
I don't know. I wouldn't be buying real estate in downtown Chicago right now.
No, it's... I mean, I bet the place is 15-20% occupied right now. Actual people.
Is this the place with the martial arts instructor studio?
Well, no, it's 175, the Insurance Exchange Building. That old square block.
Okay.
They used to. Well, I don't want to get into it too much. I want to talk more about what you want to talk about, but the, your government. They used to have a lot of government offices there. It's a massive building. It's probably. What do you think, Dave? Is it 20 stories high, a whole square block?
Oh, yeah, I can't. They're going in foreclosure. That's huge.
Yeah.
That is gigantic news down here.
Well, they were bought in 2000, a little bit before 2000, by a bunch of diamond merchants out of the Jewelers Row in New York. It's a long time ago. And they put, I'm going to say, what, $100 million in the place, David?
At least.
All the lobby, all the everything.
At least.
They closed the Excelsior, our favorite bar, which was not a good part of the deal. And it took, you know, they were behind schedule, and they turned it from essentially a type B huge office building into pretty much a type A in some areas. But I mean, it was a long procedure. I mean, we're talking the whole outside, windows, all. I mean, there has to be how many bazillion windows, and they covered over the atriums, so they cut to save on amazing amounts. Buildings that big have atriums, so a lot of people have a window, even though you're looking out over the courtyard. So they had to put a roof over the atrium to save, you know, buku energy, and they ended up, you know, with a nice building. But they had stuff like the Fed when the Dirksen Building went up, Lou. The Fed moved their Social Security people were in 175. I think it's some long term lease at $3 a foot or something ridiculous like that. So they moved all those people over to the Dirksen Building, which was high-priced real estate, in which they could have got $30 an hour for, and they were still paying a $3 over here. They'd alcohol, tobacco, and firearm guys were in there. They had a big holding unit. They hauled somebody in there on the weekends. They could hold you to sell them Monday morning. It's a big place. The Mid-America, the Mid-Am, the commodity exchange was over there, too. They had an exchange floor right there.
Well, I believe so.
That I think is a warning shot if it's not a warning cannon over the bow of Chicago leadership saying, look, guys, this decline is real and you're not doing anything to reverse it. And that they've got, I don't know at what point the power brokers step up and say, okay, fine, we've had enough of this stupidity with this mayor and this city council, we're taking control and we're going to start making some operations here and moves here to reassert, you know, the things that control to make Chicago more livable.
Well, not only that, but you can't, in this part of the loop, I mean, I know people are, you know, listen to this around the country and around the world, you absolutely cannot overestimate the amount of an economic engine the trading floors were that no longer are there. You know, we're talking with the two, three floors, the Merck, the Board of Trade, and the CBOE, 15,000 people, David? 12? All with decent jobs and all the offices and everything to go with it, because that was just on the trading floors and everybody had a place to go when they left the floor. I'm going to say for a long time, I mean, that was, those were the captains of industry here. I mean, that's saying, and now we have essentially 10 people that make all the money that 15,000 people used to. It's insanity, Lou. I mean,
I'm not talking about business consolidation because the city's not going to affect that. I'm talking about quality of life moves with law enforcement and
right.
your state's attorney and other issues that go down to the very basics of things like picking up trash. And which, by the way, I always thought, you know, the Loop area where I worked was one of the cleanest major cities in the country. You know, things like picking up trash and you know, human and non-human.
Right.
And, you know, taking care of things to make the city a place where people want to go. And, you know, that's fallen by the wayside.
Well, I mean, it's fallen
by the wayside here in Denver. I mean, we have even Denver has this idiotic problem with homelessness that we have a comparatively, not in total numbers like LA, but for a city the size of Denver, we have a comparatively large homeless problem, and it's driven, for the most part, by drug abuse, not a lack of housing, and the fact is that the city, like any number of American cities, does not have the political will to or the focus to deal with it, and there's a great book out by a guy named Michael Schellenberger who wrote Apocalypse Never, which is a really interesting study of environmental issues. But he's written a new one called San Francisco, which is about the homeless issue in San Francisco and how San Francisco has deteriorated. And his notes on dealing with the homeless issues are really, really pretty good. I mean, he talks about the fact that, you know, they have this problem in Europe, especially the Netherlands, where you know, drugs are much more accessible. And he said it takes a combination of sweeping the streets, shutting down the open-air drug markets, arresting anybody who's selling, and throwing them in jail. That's not going to happen in Chicago, and it's not happening here in Denver with any regularity. And then basically taking the people off the streets and saying, you go into housing. And as part of going into housing, you get treatment for whatever mental illness it is that that's putting you out here. Or you get into some other kind of program. And if you don't do that, then we arrest you and we put you in jail. Or we forcibly restrain you. And we put you in a circumstance where you're going to take your medication. And for whatever reason, and that basically eliminated this issue in Europe.
Well, we've been kind of watching, I've been sort of watching what's going on down here. I mean, there's been, people hanging around the streets, for lack of a better term, since I came down here. But in the 80s, it was...
Do you have tents? Do you have tents on the streets?
Oh, yeah, right in front of the place.
Unbelievable.
But where I'm getting to is it was a lot of people that clearly might have been Vietnam vets or something and they were half were sick and half were whatever. They were older people. But now it's these younger guys. I mean, there's families. Guy and wife, I don't know if they're wives, but guy and girl combos with a dog. I mean, it's they're younger. But something, I don't know if it's all drugs or whatever it is, but I think you're just surviving the day becomes so much of a drag on your body and your health that even if you're 35, you almost, it's not like you can pull up and say, let's go work 8 hours, your tent will be here when you get back. I mean, it's I don't understand why we seem to have amazing amounts of money flying around to, quote, help people, and yet half the day we talk about nobody goes to work anywhere.
We're not helping people.
No.
We're helping the people who want to help people.
Yeah.
We're giving jobs to the bureaucracy that sits out there and says, well, we can't force these people into certain shelters. I mean, you know this. We've talked about this on the show before. You know, is Tom Dart still the sheriff?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so Tom Dart, who I generally liked when I was there, you know, made the comment that his jail, 75 to 80% of the people in his jail are mentally ill. He's running a mental health clinic instead of a Cook County jail, and this is perfectly consistent with Schellenberger's assessment and really the assessments of sociologists and people who study this program or these problems, is that you've got a mental health issue with these folks in most cases, not all of them, but in most cases. That's exacerbated by drug abuse, and you have to come to grips with stopping the open air drug market, stopping the rampant drug use there, shut that down, and then forcibly. And we're not doing, we won't do this because this was the result of the great mental health legal revolution that occurred in the 70s and 80s. Force these folks back into a treatment facility where they are going to be incarcerated and forced to take the medicine that they need for their mental health issues and detox. And if they won't do that, then you arrest them when they break the law. And there's no stomach for that in our civic leadership. There's no stomach for it here in Denver.
I've never read anything I don't think that, I mean, when you and I and Dave and the rest of the listeners and everybody, when you get up and you go to work, whatever, 8-10 hours, whatever people work these days, and you give it a good slog for 8 to 10 hours. I think most people do. I mean, even the bus drivers, when I say even the bus driver, that's a tough job. I mean, the people who do the stuff that all of us need every day, and those people should be obviously respected, not more than they are. They're just regular people with just regular jobs. I fight fires, I drive buses, I'm a policeman, if you had to all of a sudden scrounge for food later and live in a tent on a street or under a bridge, I don't see how the hell, even if you're 35 years old and you're Hercules, I don't see how you could have anywhere the support, just physically, even if you weren't on drugs, that you could all of a sudden fly out of your tent and head over to the CTA and drive a bus 8 hours fine.
I agree.
And these are young people. And in one hand, we talk about the massive labor shortage. In the other hand, you look across the street and there's 50 tents.
Oh, no, I get it. But this is not, like I said, this is not, and I go back again to Schellenberger's book, and I'm not trying to be the guy who reads one book on something and is now an expert, but what Schellenberger said, and I've heard him interviewed on this, makes a lot of sense. The problems with these folks, Chief, are not, you know, they're not in shelters in many cases because they either don't want to be or they are incapable of living there given their mental state and their addiction issues. And you have to treat those. Otherwise, you can't put them into shelters. They won't go. They won't stay.
Well, they're probably, even at that age, Lou, they're probably at least 6 weeks, even if they're not on drugs, physical health, being able to handle a 40-hour week job.
Well, then you take care of that. Yeah. But you got to get them off the streets first.
I would agree. And well, whoever the genius was who closed the mental health facility in Tinley here, I mean, I'm sure he's somewhere sucking up some huge pension. That was the dumbest thing we ever did.
Yeah. You know, well, here's my take on it. I mean, there are systems and programs available to deal with these things that we know work. Our civic leadership will not do what it takes to deal with it. And Denver's a classic example. They have these tent communities, these pop-up tent communities that just surface typically next to a 7-Eleven or within walking distance of a convenience store, so that they can go somewhere and get, you know, basic sustenance, and where they can use a bathroom.
But Lou, I think we're paying people that are supposed to be doing. I mean, if this was back in those days, it probably was Democratic, a 1940s type of an attitude, where, you know, screw them, no help, no nothing, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, and it's going to be Catholic charities and people like that to help them. Problem is, I think we are spending the money, and people that are, I mean, I don't see why you don't pull up with a van and say, okay, let's sit down and talk for 20 minutes. One guy I talked to, and I haven't seen him in a while, his name was Dan, He had worked for a pallet manufacturer, and one day they showed up, and there was a note on the door that said, we're closed. And he was a guy that if, let's put it this way, you probably wouldn't hire him. He was a little bit compromised. But if he was there and he showed up every day and did his job, you wouldn't fire him either. He's a nice enough guy, and I'll bet he showed up and did what he was supposed to do. You see a lot of those people in some of the smaller town Walmarts. I don't even know what the politically correct term is. Lou, they're employable, but not, you know, I mean, we wouldn't have them at your front reception type of thing. I don't, you know what I'm talking about. I think everybody does too. I don't know how to put it in words, but he was, boy, damn nice guy. And he said, no, it's $15. If I can make $15 during the day. Well, of course, now you go into a loop where nobody comes down here. How do you make $15, you know, standing out in traffic if nobody's here? Because if you make $15, that was the number that you had to pay to go to like the Mission or someplace. He said, if you didn't make your 15, or you didn't make enough to eat and 15, then you're under the bridge. It was a total economic sort of thing. But I don't see how we can't. I mean, we're spending so much money. We put $90 billion into the system last week. We've made up money, so it's not like people aren't. I mean, how many people do we have in Washington? Was it 15,000? The Consumer Protection Bureau. Have they even worked in 2 years? They're working from home doing God knows what. I mean, for God's sake, make them do something. I mean, you know, I was reading last night that, I know somebody, not to mention names, that's, you know, is selling a house for somebody who's a 9/11 retiring person after 20 years or 22 years. And then I'm talking last night about how, or I've been listening on the radio that some cities now they're putting you on hold at 911 because they can't get people. Well, you don't let people retire at age 50, pay them till they're 65, and then wonder why you don't have any people, Lou. I mean, duh. I mean, you look at this, is a third grader running these places?
Well, so again, one of the things with respect to the labor shortage that I heard yesterday or read about yesterday is we had 3 million people retire. Over the course of the last year, that just took themselves out of the workplace.
And I'll bet half of them are under 65.
We haven't made that adjustment. I wonder, now I'm just spitballing sort of questions. So those 3 million jobs go unfilled, and you know, how are we filling those? We had, 600,000 people die from COVID over the last 12 months.
Allegedly.
Yeah, something like allegedly. Well, I mean, look, but there's an excess mortality. Let me put it this way. We've had a significant excess mortality number, and you can attribute that to whatever, the lockdown, a combination of the lockdown and COVID, whatever. But COVID is striking mostly the elderly. It's killing, in fact, I think it's 15% of the population is getting sick from it, and the vast majority, maybe as high as 70-75%, are over the age of 65 that have died from it.
There actually is a greater excess mortality in 2021 than there was in 2020.
Yes. Okay. So,
but a lot of that is,
and that's with vaccine. Yeah.
Well, that is suicide. People living alone.
Well, I mean, you know, this is the lockdown. This is the impact of the lockdown that everybody was ignoring or didn't want to hear about back in 2020. But my point is, doesn't this have an impact on things like Social Security payouts?
Sure it does.
Where you've got a disease that has cleared out maybe 500,000 people over the age of 65? I would think so. I haven't seen any reports on that, but
actually, Carl has a lot of stuff on that, and you know, the excess mortality and what ages. I mean, clearly, if you knock off, you know, 80 people in a nursing home, and it sounds terrible, there's 80 people next month aren't getting their Social Security checks. I mean, correct?
Right.
I mean,
right. But I mean, at some point, that number becomes significant in terms of impact. So, I just note things that are, you know, popping up in my timeline now because of my vaccine litigation work. But one of the things that's jumping out at me is Scott Atlas has finally resurfaced, a guy who I have tremendous respect for because he was saying things. This is the guy who in May of 2020 said, it's time to stop the lockdowns, because I can show you right now that we are, as an economy, we are costing ourselves more with the lockdown than we are saving from COVID with the shutdown. And he very, very succinctly laid out deaths from undiagnosed medical conditions, including cancer, deaths from untreated or delayed treatments, deaths from suicide, deaths from drug overdoses. And he walked all that through, and he said, we have a really good databases on this stuff from the Great Recession and some other things, where we can extrapolate how many people we're killing, and we're not killing 75 and 80 year olds with this. We're killing 30 and 40 year olds with this. And so when you look at the life hours lost, which is his economic measure, it's a classic public health policy measure. When you look at the life hours lost as a result of our shutdown efforts, we are now exceeding the number of life hours lost from COVID. And this was in May. This was at the end of May 2020. And that's one of the reasons President Trump brought him on board to talk to his health policy council, because nobody was saying this. Atlas is coming out with a new book that talks about the impact of this and the reception that he got in at CDC and some other places. I think this is the kind of retrospective that we need to start doing, and I'm really concerned based on, again, the politics of this, that we're not going to see this kind of analysis for maybe decades, because it's radioactive in terms of, you know, oh my God, I don't want to publish something that made it look like, you know, Donald Trump might have been right about some of this stuff. I'll be ostracized by my faculty.
Well, I mean, it's not just him. I mean, when they say even a broken clock's right twice a day. I mean, it wasn't like Trump was wrong on everything. I mean, there was a certain amount of,
if you admit in academia right now, in almost every college in the country, if you come out and say Donald Trump was right about something, your buddies in the faculty will ostracize you, cut you off, and the students will call for firing or suspension.
I don't understand. We got to dash here in a minute, a little bit. I'll end up with this insane comment, but I don't understand why these schools have gotten so dogmatic. I mean, when I was at, you know, maybe I was lucky in my years at University of Notre Dame and University of Chicago, the whole idea was we were searching for knowledge going forward together. I mean, and people were supposed to come up with wild ideas, and then you either get them shot down or prove them. That was considered healthy. I mean, the idea, I mean, if you were with Milton Friedman or George Stigler and you got a test and you just were like the CDC or any one of these politicians today and say, this is my policy, and by the way, there's nothing wrong about it, and we can't talk anything about it because we're at the policy. Well, there's nothing you can do in life that doesn't have some other, you know, even shooting pool, what an angle of inception is equal to the angle of rejection, whatever the hell the formula. You can't just do one thing. I mean, you shut people up. The first question out of your mind, you say, okay, if we shut people home, what are the dangers of that?
I mean, you ought to have a show on this and get Kevin and me and a few other folks on to talk about what's happening in academia and how it has moved from the classic liberal position that you and I were educated under to an anti-liberal, literally anti-liberal position.
And they think they're liberals.
But no, this is an anti-liberal position where words are violence, where the students have been taught that they don't have to listen and shouldn't listen to opposing viewpoints because they are morally reprehensible, and where certainty, we've said this before, this is a religion for these folks. And you know how religious movements go.
But it's not educational. I mean, you don't learn anything from somebody that agrees with everything you do and is afraid to say anything.
They would disagree. You're being educated in the proper way.
Well, anyway, Lou, sorry.
This is unironic. These people will unironically tell you there are certain things people should not hear about and should not discuss because they're morally wrong. And by the way, I'm the judge of what's morally wrong.
Well, I'm going to say, Lou,
they will say that unironically.
Well, we got a dasher in it right now, but I'm going to say that even, you know, a guy like me, I've been doing this, Lou, for a long time, and when I first started this, I was considered the most liberal guy around. My views haven't changed at anything, and now people have me as a right-winger because I criticize this education. This isn't education. This isn't a liberal education.
If you are a classical liberal, you are out of the social justice movement right now.
I've been booted. I know. You were already booted. Now I'm with you. Maybe we can have two tents next to each other. Like, down, by the way, the one guy down the block is in one of the tents is studying for his LSAT.
Well, he'll bring an interesting perspective to the practice of law.
Lou, have a nice weekend, buddy. SB Futures up 11, NASDAQ Futures up 82. Right back, Mr. Dan Janitas.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hear ye, the Homer Broadcasting System is on the air.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Well, welcome back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm tomorrow with Mr. Dave Scatina, who spent a lot. I hope the radio is working at least, David. You were in traffic kind of wild this morning.
Yeah, usually it was an extra 45 minutes this morning.
You didn't even move. You just sat there.
Just sat there for at least a half hour.
It'll be like 2 days before it's cleaned up. S&P Futures up 11. NASDAQ Futures up 77. Individual stacks. We have Cisco. Yet another bad earnings. Every earnings, these guys are down. And finally, yesterday I played the downside. So it's right where I want it to be. So that's, you know, who knows where it'll be by the opening. It might probably move again. It'll come out of some other... They end up come out and screw me one more time. You know, they're going to say it's even worse. It'll open up like a 35 or something. Right now, it's 53.21 down 355. Dan, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. I have a stack of I have questions because, hey, gee, yeah, Dan guy on Thursday, he's pretty good. You better ask him these questions. So,
sure.
I have stuff for you. Hey, I heard, you know, via the grapevine that some of the stuff that, You're managing for the groups I'm in as well. Some of the bonds got called. I heard. And I don't know this is anywhere near as well as you do. I don't want you to take us through that for the listeners. And the other, I have a question from actually in house here at PTI. We have some people looking to do some preferred stock. And so, geez, have Tom ask an expert guy on Thursday. What are the dividends? Are they all cumulative or not cumulative? They're specifically asking about Pacific Gas and Electric, which they haven't paid any preferred dividends in a while. Are those eventually going to be paid, or do you just say no? Those are gone, and we're starting fresh. And whichever one of these you want to tangle first, please.
Yeah, well, PG&E, I'm not familiar with the preferred. We're not in the preferred right now, but. The difference really is mandatory, you know, if it's a mandatory preferred, and that's what we own. We've talked about Blue Knight, BKEPP, and Chicken Soup for the Soul, CSSEP, and those are two preferred stocks that pay a mandatory dividend, which means they have to pay out the fixed amount just as a
you know, a company that's issuing public debt or bonds would have to pay it out. So those are basically bond substitutes. Some equities, some of the stocks that are preferred are able to, you know, they have an option. Some of them are able to, when you have cumulative preferred, you may miss a quarter, but then you have to make it up. So that's, you know, it really varies by name, and you have to look at what the, you know, again, I would recommend mandatory preferreds if you're looking for a steady flow of income. If you're looking for a company that has upside, if you're looking for that equity kicker as well, then it may not be as important. But again, it really depends on what your goal is. Is it strictly income focused, or you're looking for the kicker as well? In the cases of the two names I mentioned, the Chicken Soup for the Soul Preferred and the Blue Knight, we've had both. We've had capital appreciation, and we've had the dividend being paid consistently, and a pretty fat dividend, 9%. So that's been a win. Those have been win-wins. I still think there's upside in both of those names, even though they're trading at a premium. They also have maturity dates like bonds. So, you know, the maturity dates of these bonds, these preferred to come and due in the next couple of years. So if you're looking at a company that pays a preferred that is, or what we call perpetual, which means it doesn't have a maturity date, then you have to have that equity component is going to be really important. So you have to have a view on the stock as well. So it may be the option of buying the preferred rather than buying the common might be a little more of a conservative way of playing that with a little bit of income at the same time. But if it's perpetual, you've got to remember that, you know, things change over time, and you have to pay attention to the stock. So you have to pay attention to the underlying common stock of that company as well.
Well, Dan, I think those guys, I don't know much about it. I know there were a bunch of fires, and they got blamed for some of it. But when you enter some kind of a, I'm not going to say that bankruptcy where you're liquidating the joint, I'm talking about the ones where you get a workout arrangement, they're probably going to say that you're not going to pay any preferred stuff until you get the rest of the stuff paid off, right? Now, does that mean that you have to accumulate? I guess the question was, before they ever pay a common dividend, do they have to catch up on the preferreds? And you're saying it goes, you know, how does the bankruptcy sort of?
Yeah, absolutely. The preferred is higher in the capital structure. But if they also have public debt, if the company has issued public debt, the public debt generally will come before the preferred. So if they have bonds outstanding, they have to pay the interest on those bonds first before they can pay the dividend on the preferred. They have to pay the dividend on the preferred before they can pay a dividend on the common.
Even all the way, I guess the question is, all the way back or just starting out?
Starting from whatever day that you're, as of today, if you will, whatever day that you're looking at making the purchase. But yeah, in some cases you do have to pay in arrears, and again, it just depends on how the I call them indentures, because that's what we have for bonds. What the terms are of that preferred stock, and the terms vary from preferred to preferred. So you really have to know what you're buying, and you know whether you are going to get those dividends that haven't been paid. So generally, it's a company that's gotten into some problems that hasn't paid their dividend consistently. In that case, you have to really be careful about buying it, period. Once a company stops paying a dividend, that's a huge red flag. So even if it's the dividend that they stop paying on the preferred, that would be a big red flag. So I don't know that I would necessarily be stepping in to make that purchase.
Well, Dan,
if you are an investor that sees upside in the company, take a look at the terms of the preferred first before making that purchase. Because in some cases, yes, they would have to pay back before they're able to pay the common. In some cases, if it's a perpetual, they may or may not have to pay back. So you'd have to look at each situation in isolation. But I would also say, though, that be careful about buying, you know, any preferred stock that does, you know, that has missed payments. That's companies usually pride themselves on making those payments, and most companies look at the preferred as an income opportunity for investors.
So
and,
the
you know, again, that's generally the way that we're.
But you've talked
well,
about some
more income oriented.
You've talked about picking up some that are, I use the term distressed. But I mean, just in terms of, I mean, these are, you know, retail people that are answering, which is not a denigration at all. For a guy like you that's a pro at this, I mean, I'm sitting there thinking, how long would it take me to research whether I think the Pacific Gas and Electric is a good do? I'm going to say it's a while calling guys like you and reading what I can. I mean, it's several hours work, I'm thinking, even for a guy like you to decide whether you're going to, and you're probably going to talk to the company and find out what the hell is, talk to one of your lawyers and say what's going on in the bankruptcy, and it's a big deal. I mean, so for a retail client, for people, you know, you always say, well, you should research your stuff. Well, nobody's willing to put in that kind of work. And if they are, they don't have access to the information even that I do, much less what you have. I mean, it's a tough deal.
I agree. But I mean, some of it you can just get even on an interactive site. They can give you like basic information on each security. If you type in the ticker symbol of the security, you can get the basic information. It'll tell you what the dividend yield is. It'll tell you what you pay. You can also just, you know, Google is a good way of finding out. Just, you know, Google, you know, preferred stock for PG&E, and then you can probably come up with several different options, and then you can just, you know, find out, ask the specific question, have they paid, where do they stand in terms of payment. So that's actually probably the simplest way for someone to get on and to find that information. I find that you get a good amount of the information just through Google, you know, doing a Google search. At least you can get the basic information. But you want to find out what they're paying, what they have paid recently. We would talk to management to find out what they plan to pay in the future. You can tell how much of a priority it is. Oftentimes we'll talk to management to find out if they might possibly be taking it out. And if that's the case, then that it could be a win-win depending on what, where the price is. So if there's still any upside, if it's trading at a discount, generally you can make a little bit of money if this is considered a high cost of capital security for them.
Yeah, I used to use I thought the best for a long time was Yahoo Finance, but I don't know if they're anywhere near like they used to be.
Yeah, they're okay on some things, and I think, like I said, just doing Google, just, you know, asking Google, you know, to, what is the PG&E paying on their preferred currently? Are they current on their preferred? And then you'll get a bunch of articles that you can read, a bunch of information that you can read, that should be able to get you up to date. If it's a large, organization, that information should be pretty, you know, accurate. If not, even like I said, Interactive has, you just go in, and put in the name of the specific security, and it'll pull up a lot of that information. You know, I'm happy to help out if anybody needs, some help with, you know, reading the information and understanding what it's saying, because sometimes it is a little bit, it's not that easy to follow all the time.
It's financial speak. All right, so what about bonds getting called? What's going on there?
Yeah, so I'm trying to decide, I'm trying to see which ones. I know that Genworth is a company that's announced, and that's the one that it's a financial services company. The bonds are callable at 106, and that's actually the way I look at it. That's a win-win because, the stock was, you know, the average purchase price of the stock was par or less because we generally buy bonds at a discount. So if you're paying 100 and you're getting 106, that's not too bad. The yield at 106 is it's actually, I'm showing it being negative, but it's probably it's very close to zero. It's the you're not getting paid. This is a situation where I would not be concerned about losing the bond and losing the income at this point, because you're getting such a bump up in capital appreciation.
Well, if you pay 103 and they take it away from you 100 because you didn't read the fine print, that's a problem, but that doesn't sound like what's happening.
No, right now the bid is, I'm actually looking at the screen, the bid is 106. And actually, we actually did sell some, so this one may or may not be, I have to look more carefully. Sometimes they call a certain percentage or a certain number of them. Well,
why would they do that? They're essentially retiring zero market coupon bonds. What's the point?
Yeah, the yield, usually you're going to do it based on the, what they call the yield to, from their point of view, whatever the highest yield is. You want to get rid of the highest yielding, and in this case, this wouldn't. It's the, you know, it's the option of the company, to pay them back. They may want to, you know, improve credit rating. They may have, they might be, you know, looking to do a refinancing because rates are still low right now, so they may be able to get a better deal. They may have an arrangement already set up with the bank where they can go from their 5% down to 3.5%, and you know, after everything is figured out, they may actually be might make sense. It'd be, I guess the comparable situation would be somebody who's trying to refinance a house and they have a higher interest rate and they have to pay a certain amount in closing costs. There are fees that they have to pay in order to get that lower rate. We have to do the math to figure out whether those fees make sense, but yeah, I mean, this is a finance company, so generally they're going to be on top of those things. I when I saw that the other day, I was a little bit surprised, and I said, hey, this is an opportunity to lighten up. You know, we have some new opportunities that have come along. But, in, you know, from our point of view, it's a home run. You know, when you're able to sell at that kind of a premium. But you want to make sure that there's something else on the other side that you can purchase, that you've got, you know, and you have, you know, in fact, I have a couple of ideas. I've just been attending a conference the last few days and always trying to look for new ideas and a little more diversification. So, you know, in this case, for example, there's a, in the case of an income, looking just strictly at income, there's a closed-end fund called the Vertical Capital Income Fund, and the ticker symbol is VCIF. You can buy it.
VCIF or S?
VCIF.
Okay.
Vertical Capital Income Fund. And it has a, now this is one where it's guaranteed payout of 8%. And what it is a fund of mortgages. So it's not a collateralized mortgage fund. It's a fund of whole loan mortgages. And I met with the senior staff, including the portfolio manager of the fund, and really got a good sense of how they structure the fund and where they get their mortgages from. And this is not going to be something that you buy for growth opportunity. It's going to be something that you buy for income. And it's, you know, 8% is a pretty fat yield right now in this environment. So default rates on mortgages are extremely low. I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. They look very carefully at the mortgages. You know, every purchase that they make, they have a way of vetting ideas, if you will, and diversify geographically.
So where do you
have about buying mortgages is, you know, the prepayment risk. But I think the average life of this pool is about 5.5 years. So it's not like you don't have a huge concern about fluctuations in interest rates, major fluctuations causing you know, problems to these particular mortgages that they're invested
where,
in.
Where are they finding?
I have a lot of confidence, you know, a lot of confidence in this organization. Parent company is a pretty well-known, Behringer is a well-known real estate company in the Dallas area. And this, I think the portfolio manager I was very impressed with, I think this woman really knows what she's doing. She's been in the position for 15 years. They've had consistently good performance, and it's fairly liquid. You can trade it, you know, ticker symbol VCIF. So again, to offer a little diversification, if you don't have exposure to mortgages, and just to clarify, if you have exposure to the real estate market, like through REITs, and we've talked about REITs, that's quite different than having exposure to a pool of mortgages.
All right, so I got a question for you. Well, actually two on this, because, you know, that's what I do.
Sure.
Anyway, Dan and I met last week. We had a great time.
Yeah.
Introduced him to some of my cronies. Fit right in. I don't know if that's a compliment or not, Dan, but fitting
in. No, it's a very interesting group.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's one way of putting it, yeah. that's probably the most charitable way to put it. Where the hell are they finding an 8% mortgage? I mean, who pays that?
Yeah, no, that's the payout rate. That's what they have to pay out. So it's not like a one for one. It's not the specific rate. So here's where they find it. They're buying these mortgages at a discount.
Okay, all right. Well, fair
enough. And so it's the discount plus whatever the yield would be. And yeah, the question really is, you know, the question that I kept throwing out is the refinancing and the prepayments and all that. But right now, I mean, that's their required payout. So if you're, but in every case, every single mortgage, it's one of their requirements. They have to be purchasing that discount. And they have access that we wouldn't have or that the average person wouldn't have to these mortgages.
Right, so this is the company's paying 8%. You're not buying a basket of mortgages paying 8%.
No, the company's paying
8%.
But the mortgages that they're buying at a discount, so that's how they're able to get to that 8%.
Okay, because the other way around, because you were mentioning, I must have been brain dead when you said that, but because my stepfather was a pretty clever guy. He bought, who else but Fannie puts these things together? I think this one might have been Freddie
Mac.
This one might have been Armed Services Mortgages or something. Who did that?
Yes, yeah, these mortgages aren't necessarily ones that fall into that category,
right.
but yeah, they're the government guaranteed.
Well, I'm just going to give an example of what you were saying. He buys into this thing, and he wasn't a rich guy or anything, but I'm going to say it was a good rate back when interest rates were dropping. And I think he put like $50,000 in the thing with the intention of it being, you know, whatever, 30-year mortgages. And, his rate, he's supposed to be getting, you know, pick a number, $300 a month. Well, every month he's getting like $350, $360, because people are refinancing these things right and left. And however many thousand mortgages were in this basket, one would refinance, they'd send the money in, and everybody'd get, you know, $10 for that mortgage,
yeah, right?
Right. So after about 5 years, his rate per month, of course, now, but then your number goes down because there's less mortgages in the basket. So now he's down to like, because he was getting so much for so long, he's down to like 100-something a month because there's not many mortgages. And I think when he died, my brother took care of all his stuff. I mean, Dan takes care of everything, but I think the last check was for like 35 cents. The last mortgage.
Oh, geez.
But I'll bet it was. I don't think the whole basket was. If it was 7 years, I'd be stunned. And it was supposed to be like 30, because the rates were dropping in those days. You know, where people were always refinancing. I'm going to say they were 20 to 30 year mortgages, and I think he got the last one in 7 years. Now, of course, if it was the other way, and if you bought in and the rates started going up, you would have it for 30 years, right?
Exactly. It extends the duration or the average life. It extends the average life of the mortgage, absolutely.
But it was, you know, he wasn't upset with it. I mean, he thought it's still working. He just got his money back too quick, basically.
Right, exactly. That's what happens when rates go down. That's the thing about mortgages. They have, it's something called negative convexity. So rates go up, and they trade like bonds. Right, and so the price goes down, and then rates go down, and you have prepayments that shorten the average life. So it's, and that's why I would rather have somebody else who is doing this all day long as portfolio manager, you know, rather than us trying to do it, because there is a lot of work involved in looking at the specifics of the mortgages. Very different than the credit work that we do.
Oh, God, yeah. You got to go out and. Like, I used to chide the Federal Reserve when I started buying mortgages. I'm saying, okay, who exactly at the Fed, you know, from the downtown office here, they're gonna buy 1,000 mortgages. So the guy random samples, say 40 of them, which if you do it right, and you actually went and buy all 40, you're gonna find, okay, there's 15 with homeless people living in there, and the stuff's, you know, 3 feet high to grass. And there's going to be X number where people are paying all their stuff. The place looks fine. I mean, you'd have to get some kind of an idea what you were buying. I don't think the Fed even cares.
Yeah, you do have to know what you're buying. That's our view as well when it comes to corporates. We really want to know these companies. I mentioned that I've been in doing a conference the last few days and meeting one-on-one with the CEOs of these companies, and it's been, you know, it's so helpful to us to be able to get that information flow directly from the people running these companies. And, you know, that we see in the inflation news on the air, and I've been talking about this, we've been talking about this for 6-8 months or longer. It's now just coming to the to Main Street, if you will, and people are just aware of it. And I did ask a lot of questions regarding wages and shortage of labor and challenges. And pretty much across the board in all industries, they're having to pay higher. These companies are having to pay more for their workers, whether they be entry level that were making $10 to $12 that are now going to have to be paying close to $20. So there's pretty significant increase. Whether they're truckers, in the case of a grain company that's based in the Midwest, that they don't have, they can pass their costs through, but that trucker shortage is real, and what the truckers are getting paid is going to be, it really is going to be higher. And I think that shows that sustainable, you know, the way out of the supply chain issues is going to have to be, you know, people coming back to work, but also paying people, paying the right people for the positions. It's very hard to reverse wage inflation. It's very hard to pay, give somebody a bonus and then suddenly take it away. Give somebody an increased salary and then take it away. That would create a lot more problems. So this whole talk about transitory, I'm still in the camp that believes that a certain amount of the inflation is absolutely going to be sticky, and wages is really where this comes from. And one other very quick story, a good friend's daughter from the Boston area, in her 20s, really smart woman, got 3 job offers last week from 3 different firms in Tampa. They wined and dined her, and are paying her wages that are well in excess of what she was making in Boston to live in a place which is substantially less expensive. So it's happening in different fields. It's not just one field. It's happening at different levels of education. And I think this trend is going to continue. I do think more people are coming back into the workplace, but they're demanding, you know, better benefits, better salaries. And I do think that's going to cause inflation to be stickier.
I think you're right, Dan. I also think that in a lot of sections of the labor market, they're catching up a little for 20 years where they didn't get anything.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. They've been behind. There's no question. They've been behind, and I think there's no question that's.
We only have a minute. I got a quick question. Actually, the one I need to ask is, if you have a client right now and is looking out 2 years to get something safe, because obviously, you know, the securities firms don't pay very much anymore, if anything. Where are you putting 2 year money?
You know, I keep going back to Blue Knight and Chicken Soup for the Soul. Those both are mandatory preferreds that mature in 2 years. We had talked about Genworth; that was a bond that matures in 2 years.
You have a little bit of price risk on the preferreds. The bond, you probably don't.
No, the bond, you know, the bond kind of is traded up, but yeah, the preferreds, I would say there is a little bit of price risk, but you're getting paid such a fat dividend that makes up for it. I think that definitely makes up for it. We've talked about the self storage, REIT, that pays 6.5%.
Right.
Price has been fairly steady. The price has creeped up, and yeah, it's not a guaranteed, it's not guaranteed that the price is going to remain the same, but I think there's a very, you know, it's got a lot of,
all right, Dan, I want to roll over with one more question here. How do you deal, because we both are doing this, how do you anticipate dealing, or are you dealing with clients? And when I say dealing with them, these are your people, your clients are your friends, for God's sake. So how do you, when somebody finally is going to get something? I mean, we've got the 10 years out, or the 30 years out, 10 years 2%, 10 years 1.6, 30 years 2%, for the first time in like a while, right? So there's something there. Now, how do you, what you and I think know that once there's some loss of control of these numbers, you know, it could be 10 years to get to 2%. We might be at 3% by Easter, you know? I mean, how do you say to somebody, all right, now we can finally get something, but before we, you know, put our toe in this pan, we can't get the toe out for 3 or 4 years. Maybe we should wait a little bit more, because once it starts, it's probably not going to stop anytime soon. I mean, that's my opinion. I mean, what's yours?
Absolutely agree. I totally agree. I think I would shy away from long treasuries for that reason, that it's, once you're in, you're going to be stuck for quite a while, and it's 2%, it's all relative to what we've seen in recent years, but look back, 10 years, 15, 20 years, if you want something fairly conservative, as somebody said, one of the best hedges right now is cash.
Yeah, so, I would agree. Anyway, Dan, we got a dash, but thank you very much. Good stuff. Sorry to hit you up with so many questions, but what can I tell you? They know you're coming on, and I'm getting them, bud. S&P futures up 11, NASDAQ futures up 81. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, North Bank Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell, Mr. Dave Scatina, and aboard. S&P futures up 12, NASDAQ futures up 84. We said jobless claims came out 268, which is right about the number everybody expected, down 1,000 from last week. We've got the Dow up 17. Individual stocks, we have some earnings. We've got Cisco is actually down. Whack whack on the Cisco, down 383 to 5293. They go down every earnings, it seems. We got Nvidia the other way. They're up 23, trading 316.23. So, some stuff's moving around. We've had a pretty big earnings week. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 14, 0.1%. FTSE down 13.2%. CAC around up 8.1%. So very lackluster, as they say. The inflation data over there is hitting the sentiment index, but that doesn't seem to affect the market much over there. Nikkei down 89.3%, Shanghai down 16.5%, Hang Seng, though, they're down pretty good, down 331.3%, mostly Hong Kong tech shares, and again, we had the story from the people with Evergrande earlier, the one guy thinks that they, even though they've been selling off pieces and making these payments, by hook or by crook, basically, he thinks so by April, May, They actually have a, this is all dollar-denominated debt now, which is what I've been talking about for years, that they're not going to be able to make a payoff of $3.5 billion in dollar-denominated debt come April and May. We shall see on that, obviously. Yesterday, the Dow was down 211, S&P down 12, NASDAQ down 52, so we're trying to bounce back from that. Bonds, we're at 1.60, kind of where we've been now for a few days. One minus 0.26. Again, they made it back almost to zero, and I'm going right back down again. So I can't even, well, I guess I can imagine that. I'm thinking that the central bank over there owns, like, virtually all these bonds, which I don't think is healthy at all, as people know, but that's what they're doing. Japan up up one basis point to 0.09. We've got oil, whack, under 78.28. So it went down during the day yesterday after the show. We had it just holding over 80, but after that, they went down. It's only down 8 cents today, but still 78.34. Brent, 80.43, that's up 15 cents. Natural gas up 13 cents, 4.94, but still under $5. So it's, this is the second trip from 4.90 to 6, and I'm back again. Crazy stuff. I just wish we were, if we'd have caught that just right, David, we'd be rich, as they used to say. Our Bob unchanged at 227. We've got gold down $12 to 1857. Silver down 39 cents, 2477. So it's the breakout at 25. Well, it's back under 25. Copper down 3 cents, 423. And we've got Bitcoin under 60,000, 59,679. David, what do you got? Traffic, weather, sports. I think you know a lot about the traffic.
Oh, crazy morning. 738 in Chicago. Weather currently is 35 and sunny. We're going to have a high of 38, so we're right there. Sunshine's and cloud. Phoenix listeners, start to the day is 52 and clear. They're going to have 83 and sunny. Traffic, stay off of 55. It's a mess. There was an earlier accident right at First Avenue that blocked two lanes. Now there's and the entrance ramp is blocked and closed due to police activity. A shooting investigation is in progress. Solid traffic.
What do we do with all these shells? We don't arrest anybody.
Well, Tom, ever. I must have just missed that because it's right at South Damon Avenue between Cermak, and it's backed all the way up.
Really?
Oh yeah. Eisenhower's a mess.
Well, you do have your bulletproof windows and stuff like that.
Yeah, right. Anyway, good luck. Be careful this morning. Sports, NHL, the Hawks beat the Kraken 4-2. Arizona takes on the Blue Jackets at home tonight. In the NBA, the Suns beat the Mavericks 105-98. The Bulls drop on to Portland 112-107. In the NFL, Pats are at Falcons tonight. Bears at home versus the Ravens on Sunday, and Arizona at Seattle Sunday. Back to you, Chief.
Well, we have Mr. Flanagan, I hope, and he's our wordsmith, since he's an English teacher and so forth. Why have I so much of an issue, not that anybody cares about what I think, why do I have so much an issue with team names that aren't plural? The Cardinal.
Collective nouns, Tom?
I mean,
or not even like collective nouns.
Well, I mean, I guess you could say it could be the Notre Dame sheep, you know, because that is that is a collective noun, but a Kraken was one guy, right? Wasn't he the god of the ocean, North mythology or something?
Yeah.
Something, I don't know. But I mean, why wouldn't it be Cardinals instead of Cardinal?
Yeah, I guess a Kraken could imply a threat, you know, a mythic kind of threat, but it doesn't really work for me as a team name.
Well, even if you're like the Thunder,
the Chicago Tsunami or something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're going to be the Thunderbolt, usually they're the Thunderbolts, right?
Bolts, yeah.
Anyway, hey, John, today is instead of just me talking about economic stuff that everybody's probably tired of listening to me, I'm tired of listening to it because I wish these guys had stopped doing what they're doing so I could stop talking about it. We have a big foreclosure, allegedly. You're talking about the same one I was talking about last night, right? The 175 West Jackson?
Yep.
Now, for those that we mentioned a little bit of it earlier, but it's a huge building. I mean, it's a massive building in the South Loop. I'm going to say that the Merchandise Mart, Willis Tower, is it the third biggest building in the city or fourth? I mean, it's up there.
I would say it's probably the third biggest. It's when it was built, Tom, it was 1.8 million square feet. But, you know, there was space that was formerly occupied by tenants that I don't think now is tenant space, like, you know, parking and so on. And I think the Merchandise Mart is somewhere, when it was built, around 4 million square feet. But this was the 175 West Jackson. The insurance exchange was the largest building in Chicago until the Merchandise Mart was built in 1930.
Well, wasn't the Merchandise Mart the biggest building until the Pentagon was built?
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
It's still an impressive building. 175 West Jackson is, you know, it's 22 stories. It's a beautiful building architecturally.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, there's a simplicity and a grandeur to it. It's one of the you know, better performing buildings all during the Depression because its location was great. And it had, you know, lots of amenities. It was, you know, state of the art when it was built. So.
Right. So, if you can, I'll give a little bit of the history of it that I know of. Long about 99, 2000, it was, it reverted back to, I'm going to say, what, a B building, pretty much.
Yeah.
A lot of space, not a lot of upgrades, pretty much headed down the hall to the bathroom, that kind of thing. So it was, it was showing its age a little bit. And they still had the big, what do you call it, the internal courtyards. You could open the windows, so there was a lot of energy loss there, so I'm sure it was an energy cow. Anyway, so these guys, I believe they were a bunch of guys from New York in the Diamond District, so read into that what you will, paid huge money, and I think, I don't know about paid huge money, but they paid huge money to remodel it in the terms of like $100-110 million, right? And converted a lot of it, if you wanted it, there's a boatload of space. A lot of it was A space. And they gradually got the place, you know, a lot of securities firms, and they got a lot of law firms, and they upgraded the place. And downstairs, they got booted by dear Excelsior. I know all those people. It's a great bar and restaurant, but they got rid of that, and they got some other place down there, and they got a bunch of other places, and the lobby was totally transformed and real nice. And all of a sudden, I think it traded again in 2018, right? You know, right before all this stuff started.
Brookfield Asset, Canadian-based investor.
And I think, Jen, correct me, somewhere in the $300 million range, $250 roughly is in mortgages. Is that somewhere?
Well, on paper, I think the purchase price was $305 million.
Yeah, I'm close.
And of that, there's $258 million spread across two mortgages.
Right, so that's kind of the same numbers I had, roughly.
Right. Right. And, you know, that, I think, is current as of maybe a month or two ago.
And I'm going to say that if you walk over there, you're talking to the security guard. We're talking how the flower guy's still in business. I have no idea. The bars have gone. They still have the one sandwich joint's open. The place that all the sandwiches are the same price or almost. What's the name of that place? One of those joints is open. Virtually nothing else. They lost it. They had a huge CVS in there that year and a half ago. 2 years ago, said we're out of here before the COVID, because they were paying, I think, John, $17.5 per month. I used to know the guy who ran the place, and which they were pretty happy to pay. And I think they had a boatload of prescriptions and stuff in there. I mean, it was always crowded. And they, somewhere along the line, they had one of those leases where, as the taxes go up and the maintenance goes up, your lease goes up with it.
Yeah.
So after like 10 years, they were in there. The tax and lease. Or operation bumper was more than the rent, and they basically said, "We can pay more in rent, but you got to get rid of this other thing." And the building said no, and they were gone in a week. I mean, all of a sudden, this huge store with nothing but stacked shelves was gone. I don't know how many people they snuck in there on a weekend, and what kind of how many semis, but there wasn't a tin of baby powder left in the place, and they lost Pug Mahone's. You start, after they lost Pug Mahone's, which is the restaurant kind of bar in a building, which means in the wintertime you want to have a drink after work. I mean, a building like that with attorneys and people, you need something in the building, right? I mean,
right.
They lost something like 350 people in the 2 months after the bar closed. Some huge number. And, so now here we are with a whole bunch of empty space. They obviously aren't making can't make the mortgage payments. God knows. Now, when a word is this, when a building like that forecloses, is that tantamount to a bankruptcy of that building? Or, I mean, how does this all work its way through? I mean, it's not like you and I live there and it's a foreclosure. I mean, it's obviously, it must be a separate corp or something. I mean, it's not going to take the Canadian properties down. I'm sure it's a separate place, right? How does this all work its way through? I mean, does this mean that they don't just pay the mortgage, or they get a do they make it to bankruptcy court? Do you not pay the city? Do you not pay the electric bill? I mean, walk us through this.
Well, apparently, you know, it's 62% leased right now, but that doesn't tell the story at all. But that just means that they've got leases for 62% of the space in there. Many of those leases, I'm sure, are already in default. And there's just, you don't have foot traffic in there. You don't have people coming and going. So the occupancy of the building is somewhat less than that.
It's way less. It's probably like 15%.
You're right. It went into special servicing. The loan did, I think, this month, from what I've just been reading today about it, which means that you've got an intermediary that can help you bridge, you know, a time when you're stressed, and rather than have the loan go to default, or you have a delinquent loan, you can get, you know, a workout. You get somebody else working with you and a lender to alleviate the stress and get you, you know, back on your feet. The problem, though, in a situation like this, I don't see that building turning around anytime soon as any kind of a moneymaker for anybody
no.
who owns it.
And not unless you get
with debt.
Not unless you get 4,000 people who are back on exchange floors somehow.
Right. I mean, so, you know, Brookfield Asset, which now owns it, Brookfield Asset took over all of their real estate development and you know, asset management for just real estate last April because it was starting to go south. It was, you know, had so many delinquent properties that it was, you know, they didn't want to lose the whole thing. So Brookfield, the parent company, took over the whole real estate thing. And now that they're the ones who are the owner of that building, if the loan is, you know, they default on it, of course it means that they have a loss. They will lose their investment on it. The lender will take over possession and title. They can certainly show it as a loss on their books. And the thing that worries me, Tom, this is one building, you know, a very visible building, but, you know, by world standards, it's still a world-class office building. This is not some little strip mall, you know, tucked away somewhere. This is a high.
Well, plus you're right next door to the Board of Trade, which has nobody in there. There's nobody in there. The Board of Trade Annex, I mean, there's birds flying around over there. I mean, it's probably not that bad. But, I mean, and then but does that mean the Continental Bank building? I mean, who's in that place?
Right. You know, the options to a borrower at a time like this, if you want to, you know, sort of put the skids on running up legal fees as you try to fight a foreclosure, is you just give a deed in lieu of foreclosure to the lender. And you, of course, lose everything, but you save yourself, you know, immediately. You're not responsible for the taxes on it or the upkeep or anything else. You surrender to the lender, which, depending on who the lender is and what the lender's got going on elsewhere, may not be a very attractive option. You know, I always felt that the last thing most savings and loans wanted was to take title to, delinquent property.
Oh, yeah.
They were not property managers. That's not how they were set up. So they would work with you to keep the loan performing somehow, or give you a break on it.
They must be. I'll bet them. They don't even. They're not close to matching up on money. But now, I guess what I'm trying to get, and I'm sure you're going to tell me they're all different, but I'm going to say that if I'm one of these places, I mean, I knew some people that were my clients that had all kinds of buildings and all kinds of, one guy said they had, at one point they had 28 limited partnerships with every building or every little strip mall or whatever, every restaurant, where everything was their own separate place with their own separate mortgage and so forth. Now, whether there was a guarantee from the top, I don't know. You have to read it. But now my question is, if this was, you know, Scatina Hot Dogs, Dave Scatina Hot Dogs, that decides I'm not going to make it, and he...
Beef sandwiches.
All right. And he declares bankruptcy. That means everybody, if you just delivered the bread yesterday, you're not getting a check until the bankruptcy court says, okay, you can pay it, right?
Right.
So
right.
Now, does that, is not being able to pay the bank going into foreclosure, does that usually run parallel with a bankruptcy to whatever the building entity is?
No, there's no essential connection between them.
So if I painted an office for you last week, I still should expect to get paid.
Right.
Now, when does that stop? I mean, because clearly, I mean, if you're foreclosing on your loan and you're taking in 5 hours and you're spending 10, when do you tell the city to go pound sand on their tax bill?
Or well, no, the city will be waiting for whomever succeeds to ownership if it does end up in it, like in the deed in lieu of foreclosure, or it goes all the way through the courts and they fight about, you know, everything to the last dollar. The meter is still running for the city. If whoever is responsible for the taxes, however, doesn't have the money, then you've got a tax sale situation where the property can be auctioned to satisfy the taxes.
How many times can you sell a place?
Well, you know, the trouble is, you know, in a situation that we're in now, none of these are attractive prospects for any investors unless you realize that you're going to take a bath on it. You're going to come in with a really low figure if you're going to bail somebody out, because you know the property is not sustainable at the current rate, and you know it's never going to be fully leased for the near future. So what are we talking about? You know, how do these buildings survive as income producing entities for an investor or for the city? It's just it puts it into a tailspin for everybody.
Well, Jan, there's having done a lot of remodeling in a 100-year-old building. I think at some level, if somebody gave it to you, you wouldn't want it.
Right.
I mean, it's amazingly scary to say, but I mean, if there's nobody in the place, what's the maintenance? What's the heat? What's the I mean, what are we even talking about?
And just to keep it going so that you don't completely destroy the building.
If you have hot water
heater, steam heater, whatever, and if you don't keep it heated, you're looking at a complete loss. You're looking at a failure of all the utilities in there. So
you got to get how many elevator banks have to keep running, because they don't all go to the same floors. I mean, I go to when I go to the health club, which, you know, four nights a week. I mean, I go to this is 425. Used to be 440, then they changed it to 425. They sold it, you know, a few years before all this happened. These guys got to be gagging on it, John. They're absolutely gagging. You walk over and you walk. Literally, the lady who doesn't care about me from Adam behind the security thing can't wait to say hello and wave. I'm the only one there. She's bored. It's not like she likes me. I mean, it's scary, the lack of traffic.
This is the thing about lockdowns, Tom. You know, we have never really had a lockdown like we've been living in. And the lockdown for me has never been lifted. I mean, the one that went into effect in March of 2020 is, for all, you know, intents and purposes, still there. It's now become something not official, but you can't reverse it. There's no way now of making all of a sudden people want to return to their former.
There's a lot of people down here that refuse to wear a mask and they want to come into the building. Man, one of my good buddies, you met him last week, and I'll just say the guy with the very white hair, his company, they 5 months ago. The boss comes back, or 6 months, and he goes, all right, I'm back, everybody's back, which is, of course, the way I had it pegged all the way. The minute the boss comes in, everybody better come in. That's just human nature, right? You know, so the boss comes in, all of a sudden they went to the mask mandate, and he goes, screw it, I'm not wearing a mask, we can all go back home. Okay. And now some people are back at work, they're probably half and half, and I got, you know, the desks spread out, and I was at a restaurant last night, everything's right back to normal, I didn't see a mask anywhere. Out in the burbs, And I'm going to say that if those tables were 6 feet apart, I'm going to be a jockey in a sixth race today. So get a load of this. You should have come with. We only got 2 minutes. The table next to us, loud and boisterous, nice people sitting down. All of a sudden, somebody knew somebody. Well, it turns out a judge. What's the court out there, Burr Ridge?
DuPage.
Yeah, whatever it was, when one of the judges retired, he had this huge party table of about 16, 20 people sitting there. And to say it was loud was an understatement. They were having a good old time. And we got to meet a few of the judges, the chief judge. we had a four table, but only three of us sitting there. So it was such an effort to get out of their table, to go like to the men's or ladies' room. When somebody came back, they'd sit at our table and BS with us for a while. it was hilarious. It was a lot of fun. But we talk about it, you just land into things, right? And you could have got yourself a job as a judge if you'd have been there.
Oh, I got my jury summons in the mail yesterday, Tom, so I'll be able to report from the inside in a couple of weeks about what jury duty is like.
Where do you have to go? Where are you going?
Rolling Meadows.
Oh, well, you're kidding.
No.
God. I was, real quick, I told you Eric's story, didn't I?
Yeah.
Well, everybody knows Eric May. He's been on the show before, and we'll have him back soon. All of a sudden, I pull out, coming into the show, and this is back when it was still light in the morning. I see Eric at the bus stop. I go, Eric, where the hell are you going at this hour? And he goes, I'm going for jury duty. And I said, where's jury duty? He goes, well, Rolling Meadows. Eric doesn't drive. There's a Northwestern stop somewhere near me. I go, Eric, get in the car. I'll drive you over there, for God's sake. I'm not going to take the bus. So take him over, and he goes, so he ends up, you know, of course, Eric, you know, he's real good at the, you know, whatever, city transportation. Well, there's supposed to be a bus from the Rolling Meadows stop for all the people who get jury duty from the city for Rolling Meadows. So, turns out during the COVID, the bus is gone, but they didn't upgrade the site.
So sounds right to me.
Yeah, so he's sitting there for like an hour, and then a cab goes by, so he hops in the cab, so it costs him like $20 to get over the 2 miles, the cab ripped him off, right? So he shows up, and now he's a little late, and they're kind of giving him grief for that. So then there's these people going to this jury room. I don't even think they're going to have a jury trial. All these people finally go, all right, anybody who's not already in the room, you can go home. So he's like, how the hell do I get home? He ended up walking. It was like a 95-degree day. I ended up walking all the way back to the place. He goes, I might as well walk. I was 2 hours away from a train. He goes, I got home. I was sweaty as hell. What a morning. So what do you get paid, $18 or something? he was that happy. So you're going out there. Good luck on this, by the way.
Yeah, I should talk to him. I mean, he could probably save me a lot of mistakes.
Well,
I'm not going to be driving out there either. So.
Well, if you take the Northwestern, there's supposedly a way to get you over there with a shuttle or something. But if not, you can. For those that don't know where this is, if you're in Arlington Park, which is now going to be whatever, the opposite side of where you walk into the racetrack, like where the back stretch is, there's a street back there, and across that street is where this courthouse is. So your worst case is, You can walk around the park, Arlington Park, and then you can take the train right from there. John, thank you very much, buddy. Very educational on the stuff with the building. I mean, we're going to be hearing a lot of that. S&P futures up 11, NASDAQ futures up 86. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.